Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with New York City pianist and composer Ben Bierman on the 2022 CD Songs for Aunt Mary. His last record was called Some Takes on the Blues, and it's focused on the blues, while this set of compositions are the types of songs that are made up largely of the Great American Songbook. These standard song forms are as natural to Ben as the blues. And over the course of our conversation, we talk about Aunt Mary, COVID life, the state of the jazz business, and so much more. Enjoy this interview.
It's great to catch up with you. I can't remember exactly. I know it was pre-pandemic, but, you know, things have changed quite a bit since we talked last.
Yeah, I think it was, I looked it up maybe 3 years ago. It's been a funny time, all right. Funny time.
Yeah, it really has. So I guess that with that being said, is my kind of lead into everything. You know, how did you do over COVID, and how did that time change you now that we're coming out of it?
Well, over the last 13 years or so, have been very different for me. In that, most of my life I was a freelance trumpet player. And then in 2009, I got a job teaching at John Jay College, teaching music, you know, and at John Jay College. So my trajectory kind of changed a little bit. I was less dependent upon my freelance income and kind of more stable financially. And by the time the pandemic came, for me, it was interesting because I don't mean that in a good way, because my job continued. You know, I still got my paycheck every 2 weeks, and most of my friends were really struggling, you know. So it was a little bit of a, I had a term for it that I used, like a survivor's guilt a little bit, you know, because... here I was kind of doing just fine when the whole music business was completely tanking and my friends were really having a hard time. So it was strange in that regard. I was really fortunate to have a job that continued. But at the same time, then I was running my department. I was the chair of my department at John Jay College and in the pandemic, and that was very challenging. And it really hurt my productivity as a musician and a scholar. I was very much wrapped up in trying to keep everybody employed. You know, I have over 40 people that I was responsible for, and keep them with schedules that keep them employed and kind of manage all the difficulties that were happening and between administration and us. And I was like a go-between. So it was really very stressful. It was been a very stressful time in that way, and working on this project that we're going to talk about today on my Songs for Aunt Mary was something that I guess you could call it a pandemic project. Like a lot of people have recorded solo records during this time, and so in a way I guess you could say that. And it was kind of a way for me to escape from the stress that I was undergoing. So it took me a while, but it was a really fun project that I was able to do during that time, and when I couldn't be going into a studio or anything. So it's, in terms of the future, who could say? You know, I can't predict what's going to happen moving forward. You know, I one thing that's happened since we last spoke was that I've become very active. I was doing it then, but really a lot more so now, very much very active in the world of artist rights and protection of artist rights and copyright infringement. And I watched that, and I watched the music business very carefully, and it's completely unpredictable, you know, and it's changing so fast. I'm sure you get this. Are you getting this from other people you talk to, how quickly it's changing?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, it's surprising, actually. You know, I don't think anyone really knew during the pandemic how this was going to change. And I think there was optimism because there was Bandcamp Fridays and certain things that people were hopeful were going to take place. But now that we're actually kind of coming out and a new world we're entering into, I get that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we'll have to see, you know, and everyone is having to make adjustments. And you kind of don't know what you're adjusting to. So, you know, for example, like this record, I have, you know, I'm working with two of the show, who are helping me get this out. But I'm still a little bit confused about really how to get it out there to people. You know, and there's so much going on. There's so much music being put out, and nobody buys anything anymore. Everybody just streams or whatever. And if, so, it's tough to figure it all out. But I am happy about the music, so I try and focus on that.
So it had to be comforting to be able to delve into a family member and the American Songbook. This had to be comfortable during this time of such turmoil and uncertainty in the world of jazz music.
That's interesting, Joe. I hadn't thought about it in that way exactly. And I guess I said that earlier. I guess I kind of indicated that, and that's something that I hadn't thought about. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to think that way. And yes, it was. It really was. It was kind of like a respite, you know. I hadn't thought of that. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed that as a place to escape to, kind of.
You know, and I always hear that from musicians, you know, whenever they can kind of delve into, you know, the American Songbook and things that have been familiar that kind of have been guideposts for them throughout their careers, it brings a lot of comfort. So talk to me a little bit, since this album is really kind of, you know, the name of it is actually for songs for Aunt Mary. Tell me about Aunt Mary and why this conjures up such great memories for you.
Well, my Aunt Mary was a wonderful piano player. And she, born and raised in a small town, Fremont, Nebraska. We visited there. Both sides of my family are from Nebraska. I'm not. I'm the only one. I was born and raised in San Francisco, and been living in New York for forever. But we used to go to Nebraska every summer and spend time at her house and also another town, my paternal side of the family. And she would come stay with us for months at a time. And so she would stay with us for at least two or three months out of the year. We had a tradition in our home growing up, which was we sang songs at the piano. I'm sitting here, I'm looking at my piano right now, and it's an old Steinway upright that came from my grandmother, they went to my mother, and now it's with me. And we used to sit around this piano and sing songs all the time. And my mother Susie, who's also I also write for on the record, she was a wonderful piano player and singer, and neither of them were professional, but my aunt was like a minstrel in her small town. She played everywhere. She played at what they used to call nursing homes and rest homes. She would play there. She'd play at town functions, and she was also the town photographer, so unofficial. She was everywhere, and she was on the street, always huge smile and a big compliment for everyone she met. And her piano playing was like that. She could read music and write music, but she played largely by ear, and just played her tuchus off. It was like a party when she played. And so I grew up with that, and she and I shared a lot, and we played together a lot. And we, you know, besides just sing-alongs, we did a lot of playing. I played trumpet, she played piano. And she taught me a lot without really knowing what she was teaching me. She taught me a great deal, and I taught her stuff. I helped her kind of broaden her harmonic tablet a little bit, you know, taught her a little bit about chord extensions and stuff like that, and she just brought it all into her music, and we had a ball. We just had a ball. So These are all original compositions, but they're in that style of the old songs that we sang, you know, verse, chorus, and multi-sections, kind of like even where, you know, like an A and a B and a trio section, you know, there's always multiple sections. And so it's a tribute to her, but it's also really an exploration of the song forms with my language. And I had a lot of fun with it, and they're all kind of that way, except the last two are very different. They're a little bit more kind of through composed a little bit. And actually the very last song was the first one I wrote, which is ironic. Really, I was just enjoying working in that comfortable medium, the medium that really is the closest to me, along with the last record, which is the blues. So these two are really like roots music for me, along also with Latin music, which is something that's also very strong in my background. So this is really who I am, you know. And I appreciate getting to talk to you about it, because we got to talk about my last record, Some Takes on the Blues, which was also really a very personal record. So after being a musician for my entire life, I'm 68 now, after being a musician my entire life, I finally have put out some music that's really who I am. And so I'm super pleased with that.
Well, and I guess that's the epitome. What you're embodying is that idea that it's just never too late. And I think I've heard from a lot more musicians over this pandemic time, because everybody's kind of looked in the mirror a little bit more, and people are releasing albums, you know, in their early 40s for the first time. I mean, there's things that are happening that are transpiring, I think, that is hopefully a flip side to what's going on with, you know, actually, you know, selling units that is very hopeful. That's emblematic of the world of jazz. Jazz is an art form that does it because of the soul, because of the feeling that comes out of it. I think that the thing I see from my end of the microphone is that this community is stronger than ever. I don't think that students have stayed away from college or pursuing jazz studies because of it. I think that it's only been made stronger, and I think it's emblematic of a lot of these periods that we've lived in American history, whether it was Prohibition, which we knew very well about in Kansas City because we roared through it with Tom Pendergast, or other generations that have gone through hard times. But what I see that's hopeful about what you have just said, what you're doing, and what a lot of musicians are doing, is you're continuing to make this art form as viable and vibrant as possible after going through a very hard pandemic that we've all lived through.
Well, that's interesting, Joe, and you know, appreciate those thoughts, and I agree with them, but I have to add something to it as well, maybe kind of on a different note and not quite as positive, which is that we need to make a living. And that part of the music business is kind of, you know, how the world in general views us and what we do, and views music as something that is free now or extremely cheap, right? So it's a very dangerous time. Which is why a lot of us are working in the area of artists' rights, because it's a dangerous time where the idea of music as a profession is slipping away. And so, yes, we want to express ourselves, and I think that's very strong, as you said. At the same time, it's getting harder and harder to be able to sell your music and make some money off of it. So that's the other side.
Yeah, I get that. And I just actually, I'm getting ready to hopefully get some press passes to a big show coming here to Kansas City. And I kind of heard through the grapevine that there is some concern that they're not going to be able to fill the seats for a very heavy-hitting jazz musician that's going to come to town. And that's another reality of things, is that, you know, there is still that live element that you can't get people in. But what I'm curious about is, with this album, you know, for such a deeply personal album for you and feeling so comfortable putting this out, I'm curious, what are you hoping the listener gets from this experience?
Maybe I'll I'll kind of turn it around like I did last time, Joe, when we spoke. And I'm happy to answer that question, but I'm curious, before I do, you know, what was your experience listening to it?
I really felt that what I've tried to do with these albums, and I may be a little different because I'm getting these and vetting these because I'm going to play it to a lot of people. I also have a personal feeling that goes into this, and I always like the overall visceral experience of something like this that's personal. You know, you have your aunt on the front. You could just tell by the pose that there's a fire that's going on, and based on your description, it fits what I felt, what you were channeling on this album, and it just feels good. There's a lot of this that harkens back to an era that made me really fall in love with jazz music, and I think that's a comforting feeling now that we're coming out and we're seeing things in a different way, and I can actually go physically see live jazz. And I think there's two components to this that are going on from my perspective. There's a lot of casts out there that are doing things that are kind of electronic, experimental, and kind of blending the traditional jazz, and it's awesome. It's really pushing things in a way that I think Miles did the last 30 years of his life. But then I also see another side of this where it's like comfort food, and it's innovative, but it's, you know, it's still comfort food. You still want to go down on certain days that are kind of, you know, musty and rainy outside and have a bowl of soup with some good bread. But sometimes you want to go out and have a sushi you've never had before. So I think what I felt with this album is a level of comfort that I'm always so happy to get in touch with. And I have a personal feeling about this. I really am. I do like traditional jazz. I like things that are a derivative in a good way, or a offshoot of traditional jazz, but I still like that. That's what made me fall in love with this idiom. So, you know, for what it's worth, that's kind of my overall feeling of jazz overall, and more specifically your album right now in 2022.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. You know, and that's you know, for me, that's right on the money, honestly, because that's what it is for me too. And I this is also how I got into jazz, was through popular songs of the 20s, 30s, and 40s, right? That was singing with my family, right? And then it was revelatory for me to get, as a young person, to have picked up solo Thelonious Monk playing standards. And kind of, he took those standards and did something totally different with them while still playing them really pretty straight, you know. And that actually had a huge, I've been listening to that record on a regular basis for, 55 years, something like that. Still have my original vinyl. And so that's really how I slipped into jazz as well, is through songs, through popular songs. And it is where I go as a comfort level between to that and to the blues. That's really where I slip right in. And what I guess, you know, I have two hopes, you know, for the record. One, I really want it to be something that people, when they have friends come over, they can put it on. You know, put the record on. It's in the background. You're socializing. It's something that can be there in a social atmosphere, and creates a vibe. I think the record has a vibe. You know, it turned into almost like a suite. It just all goes together. And so I hope people do that. I also really would love other people to play it, play these songs. You know, I think there are songs that are very playable for jazz musicians and very interesting for jazz musicians. There's all kinds of cool chords and cool progressions and beautiful melodies. And so I think those are two big hopes that I have. And to that end, I'm actually putting out a songbook along with it. So I'll have fake sheets and also the written music. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. And going back to what we talked about actually selling and making money off of this, I really want to make sure that you have the right arena here to tell everybody where's the best place to pick up the music, where's the best place to get the book, you know, anything, your previous album. Where's the best place to go and to get this so they can support you?
Best place to go is to go to benbierman.com, and they'll find out, they can find everything there. This record's not up yet. This record's not due out until October 22nd. Is our actual release date. So I'm trying to figure out how to introduce it. I see people doing all kinds of interesting things, putting out singles and stuff like that. I'm not sure. I'm kind of struggling with that, honestly, Joe, a little bit, trying to figure it out. But my website, benbierman.com, is the place to go. And that leads you to my Bandcamp page and to everything, and also leads to my writing, because I also write. So, you know, it's got a lot of my scholarship and stuff like that. So it kind of gives a picture of everything I do. So that's a good place.
Wonderful. And one more thing before we go. You know, we've been away from live music. Things have been kind of turned upside down over the last couple of years. As we reemerge, what are you hoping we all realize about the power of live music as we get back to seeing it again?
I hate to be repetitive, but I really hope that people can start seeing the value, the importance and the value of music to their lives, and be willing to pay for it and support it. You know, I would like to encourage everybody to not give up your CD players or your turntable, and to buy physical product, buy a CD every month, buy a vinyl record every month, go to a show every month. That's not asking a lot, you know, or buy a full album download. Don't buy a single download, buy the whole record. We all make these records as whole things. You know, they're not supposed to be listened to individually. You can, that's fine, you know. But that's what I hope. I hope that people can start again appreciating music like they used to, as something that, you know, is important enough for you to actually pay for it. So that's one thing I really hope. And the one thing I would like to mention before we go also is that each one of these songs, there's 9 songs, and each one of them is directly related to a relative on the side of my, on the maternal side of my family, not just my aunt, but my mother, my great uncle, my grandfather, my great grandfather and great great grandfather. And my middle name is Reynolds. And so there's a Reynolds waltz in here. And the eighth and the ninth songs, the eighth song is It's Inevitable, which has this kind of a repeated little refrain that keeps coming back and forth. And then the line stops here. And I am the last of the Reynolds line. With that with the Reynolds name in my name, there's no one else after me in our family that carries the name. So that's the line stops here. It's the last song on the record. So that's something that just kind of happened, and so it's a little bit magical. I'm always sorry I didn't give one of my kids the name Reynolds as a middle name, but the line stops here. And this is a picture of kind of a musical picture of many generations of my family.
Wonderful. Ben, hey, man, thank you for opening up about the album. Good luck with it. I really appreciate it. It's great to catch up with you.
Well, thanks, man. And thanks, you know, for all you do. Really appreciate it, Joe.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Ben for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.